Okay, we're beginning here on Chaf Amud Aleph, about 11 lines down. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the statement of Mar Ukva yesterday, which is that the Adar HaSamuch LeNisan is always Chaser, that the Adar that is adjacent to Nisan is always a month that is Chaser, it's always a 29-day month. The Gemara challenged that based on the fact that the next Mishnah on Daf Chaf Aleph says that Al Shnei Chodashim Mechalim Et HaShabbat, that the Edim that are coming to testify with regards to the new moon can be Mechalel Shabbat in order to bring testimony about the new moon for 2 months. That's the month of Nisan and the month of Tishrei. The Gemara asked, if you always know that Adar is Chaser, as well as the fact that we also had before the fact that Elul was always Chaser, then why would you need the Edim to be Mechalel to Shabbat in order to establish when Rosh Chodesh was? If Rosh Chodesh was always going to be on the 30th day after Rosh Chodesh Adar or after Rosh Chodesh Elul, because it would always be a Chaser month of 29 days, and the 30th day would be Rosh Hashanah or Rosh Chodesh Nisan. The Gemara's answer was, because it's a mitzvah, the Kadesh al pi Ariyah. And the Gemara showed that that can go in both directions, that mitzvah, the Kadesh al pi Ariyah, will tell us that despite the fact that we either know or don't know when Rosh Chodesh will come out, we'd still prefer to have the Edim come because l'chatchila, there's a mitzvah, the Kadesh al pi Hariyah. And so even though the Chachamim might want to establish a certain date as Rosh Chodesh, they'd rather have Edim come and back them up because of that mitzvah, the Kadesh al pi Hariyah. Now, Rav Kahana challenges that perspective and says, Meitiv Rav Kahana, in the next Mishnah, again on Chaf Aleph, it says, Shehamikdash Kayam, when the Mikdash was extant, Mechalalin al Kulan mipnei takanat al Korban. That when the Mikdash was around, then they were Mechalal Shabbat for the Edim to come on every Rosh Chodesh, because they wanted to make sure that the Korban Musaf of Rosh Chodesh was brought on the proper day. So therefore they allowed the Edim to be Mechalal Shabbat to establish Rosh Chodesh, because they wanted to get the Korbanot right. And Rav Kahana says, Umikulu la mishum de mitzvah de Kadesh ala Ri'iyah. The reason given for being Mechalal Shabbat by the other months of the year is not because there's a mitzvah, the Kadesh al pi Ariyah, which should have been true of the other months of the year as well, but rather because of the Korban at the time of the Mikdash. If that's true, then Nisan v'Tishrei Nami, lav mishum the mitzvah, the Kadesh al Ariyah. If that's true, then Nisan and Tishrei, which have a different status in the upcoming Mishnah, where we're Mechalel Shabbat for Nisan and Tishrei, even when the Mikdash is not extant after the Korban HaMikdash, it must be the reason for that has nothing to do with the Ri'iyah. Because if the reasoning behind being Mechalel Shabbat for those 2 months is because it's mitzvah the Kadesh Ri'iyah, that's equally applicable to all the other months, and should have been the reason given for being Mechalel Shabbat by the other months. The fact that we connect the being Mechalel Shabbat to the Korbanot in the Mikdash, and therefore the other months of the year are tied to the Mikdash, whereas Nisan and Tishrei are not tied to the Mikdash, indicates to us that the reason we're Mechalel Shabbat for Nisan and Tishrei is because of the Moadot, and setting up the Moadot. And once you do that, then if Nisan and Tishrei are not because of Mitzvah Kesh Ri'iyah, then I amart bishlama zimnin malei v'zimnin chaser, if you then say that sometimes the month of Adar is 29 days, and sometimes it is 30 days, and same with regards to Elul, then Mishum Hachi Mechalalin. Then it makes sense to me Mechalal Shabbat in order to establish which day is the proper day for that month, meaning which day is Rosh Hashanah in Tishrei and which day is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Eliyah Marti Olam Chaser, if you tell me that Adar HaSamuch Nisan is always Chaser, Amai Mechalalin. There's no reason to be Mechalal Shabbat. We're always going to establish Rosh Chodesh Nisan on the 30th day after Rosh Chodesh Adar, and it's irrespective of whether the Edim come or not come. So why have them be Mechalel Shabbat? And we just established it has nothing to do with the fact that there's a mitzvah, the Kadesh al pi Ariyah. Gemara ends, Tiyufta. That is a strong refutation of that position of Mar Ukva that Adar, HaSamuch LeNisan, is always Chaser. Tosafot, and we mentioned this in yesterday's daf, says even though the Gemara ends here with the Tiyufta, we still follow this position of the Gemara, and that the Adar that is proximate to Nisan is always Chaser. And therefore, when we have a leap year and we add in an extra Adar, it's the Adar Rishon, that the extra month that we make 30 days, and not the Adar HaSamuch LeNisan. So based on that, we follow this position despite the fact that there's a tiyufta, and Tosafot says, because it makes sense, or it would be nice to, when we add in the month, that that should be the fuller month or the 30-day month. And we do maintain this position of Marukba, that the Adar HaSamuch, the Nisan, is always 29 days, even though that was not true in the time when they were Mekadesh al pi ha-ri'iyah. Ki ata Ula, Amar Avru le'alul. When Ula came, he said that they made Elul 30 days, so that it was not a 29-day Elul, but rather a 30-day Elul. Amar Yerula, Yadai Chavrin Bavlai Maitivuta Abdinan Behadayu. He says, do the people in Bavel understand what efforts or extents that we are going to in order to protect them? So Maitivuta, what is this good that they are doing for the people of Bavel? Ula Amar Mishum Yarkaya. So it's given for two reasons. One is the vegetables, and the other one is the mitim, those that die. So this we'd explained in yesterday's daf as well. This has to do with the fact of Lo Adu Rosh, the days in which Rosh Hashanah cannot fall, was a Sunday, Wednesday, and Friday. We discussed why that was. Sunday was because of the Hoshana Rabbah would then fall on Shabbat, but Wednesday and Friday had to do with the fact that if Rosh Hashanah fell out on a Wednesday or Friday, Yom Kippur would either fall out on Friday if Rosh Hashanah was Wednesday, or if Rosh Hashanah is Friday, then Yom Kippur would fall out on Sunday, and you would have Yom Kippur and Shabbat being adjacent to each other, and they didn't want that to happen. Why did they not want that to happen? So there are two reasons that are given over here. Ula says it's because of Yarkaya, because of the vegetables. You have 2 days in a row where you cannot pick vegetables because of the adjacency of Shabbat to Yom Kippurim, and they wouldn't be able to get the fresh vegetables. The other position, which is brought by Vacher Bachanino, is because of Meitayo. In their day, obviously, they did not have refrigeration, which is affecting the vegetables, as well as the fact that it affects the ability to have a corpse lie around without being buried. And since on Yom Kippur and Shabbat, you cannot bury the corpse, there's a possibility of a corpse staying around for 48 hours, and it would clearly deteriorate, especially in the heat, and they didn't want that to be the case. Gemara says, "My benayu." What's the difference between them? Ibka benayu Yom Kippurim shechal yotachar Shabbat. Has to do with Yom Kippur that falls out after Shabbat. If it fell out on Sunday, mandamar mishum metaya mabrinan. For the one who says that the problem is metaya, then we would be ma'aber. We would force the lul to be 30 days in order to push off Rosh Hashanah from Friday to Shabbat, so that Yom Kippur would not fall out on Sunday. Mandamar mishum yarkaya. The one who says because of the vegetables. When do you need vegetables? Over here. So you pick the vegetables before Shabbat, and you'll have those fresh vegetables on Shabbat. Well, if you pick them before Shabbat, they wouldn't be fresh on Yom Kippur. That doesn't really matter, because you don't eat on Yom Kippur anyway. So for that reason, there's no reason to knock off Rosh Hashanah and push Yom Kippur out. It's not a problem to have Yom Kippur immediately after Shabbat. And based on that, we would not be ma'aber elul. We'd leave elul as 29 days. Let Rosh Hashanah fall out on the Friday and have Yom Kippur come after Shabbat, because the only time you need the vegetable is at night, Motzei Yom HaKippurim. So if that's when you need them, Le'orta Tarach Lamaiti, you'll go out and pick them on Motzei Yom Kippur. You can go and pick them and bring them in fresh. It's not a problem. Uleman Damar Mishum Yarkaya Ba'abri Mishum Meitaya. According to the one who says that the problem here is the freshness of the vegetables, and therefore it doesn't apply when Yom Kippur falls on Sunday, he also should have to worry about the problem of the meitim, of the corpses lying around. If that's the case, then he would force Elul to be 30 days in order that Rosh Hashanah will not fall out on a Friday and Yom Kippur on a Sunday, because he still has to address the issue of the corpses. So Gemara says that can't be the difference between them. The problem is when Yom Tov is adjacent to Shabbat. And when Yom Tov is adjacent to Shabbat, then we have the problem. Ben milafanaha, ben milachara. Whether it's before or after. Madamar Mishum Yarkayo, the one who says that it has to do with Yirakot, Me'abrinan, we force Shabbat not to be adjacent to Yom Tov. Madamar Mishum Meitaya, when the one who says it has to do with Meitim, Efshar Be'amame, we can use non-Jews to do the burial. We discussed this in Beitzah, that with regards to Yom Tov, you're allowed to use non-Jews to do a burial on Yom Tov. So if that's the case, then when you have an adjacency of Yom Tov Shabbat, we don't worry about the corpses, because whether it's before or after Shabbat, you can bury the mate, whether it's on the first day, which is Friday, if that's Yom Tov, or whether it's after Shabbat on the Sunday, which is Yom Tov. So you'll never have more than 24 hours where the body cannot be buried. either if it's passed away on Yom Tov, you can bury it right away. Or if it passed away on Shabbat, or right before Shabbat, you can bury them on Yom Tov, which would be after Shabbat. So because of that, we don't worry about the Metim. So that'll be the difference between them, whether we move Rosh Hashanah in order to avoid the adjacency of Yom Tov to Shabbat to protect against Yarkaya, which would be true. You cannot pick vegetables both on Yom Tov and on Shabbat. So you have a 48-hour period where you can't pick fresh vegetables. And if you pick them either before Yom Tov or before Shabbat, they will not last those 48 hours. On the other hand, when it comes to Metaya, that would not be a problem. So Mar says, "Unaman damar mishum Metaya, ba'avre mishum Yarkaya." Gemara is the one who says that the problem here is keeping the corpses around. So you're right. When you have an adjacency of Yom Tov and Shabbat, that is not an issue, but he should still have to address the issue of fresh vegetables. So the Gemara says, "Efsher bechamime." You can refreshen the vegetables. If you put them into hot water, or you boil them in hot water, you can bring back the freshness of the vegetables. So he believes, even though you're right, in that 48-hour period, the vegetables would deteriorate. But nevertheless, if they are boiled in hot water, they would bring back a certain amount of that freshness, or they would remain edible. And because of that, he does not worry about the vegetable issue over that 48-hour period. Ihachi, maishna ledidan. So why, then, if this is the reasoning over here, why does it matter for Bnei Bavel, afilu ledidhu nami? It should have equal application to Bnei Eretz Yisrael. Ula comes along and says, look, we are being ma'aber elul, we're making a 30-day month in order to push off Rosh Hashanah, so we don't have these adjacencies between Yom Kippur and Shabbat, or Yom Tov and Shabbat, and we're doing this because the beneficiaries are Bnei Bavel. Do they know how good we are being to them, the Bnei Bavel? But if the reason has to do with having these 48-hour Yom Tov Shabbat or Yom Kippur Shabbat periods, then that should be equally problematic for the people in Eretz Yisrael, because they also have problems of Metaya, and they also have problems of Yarkaya. So Gemara says, Lididan in Bavel Chavin Lan Alma. We have it much hotter. Since Bavel is in a valley, and it's in an open valley in a deep plain, the airflow there is not great, and it gets much hotter. Since it gets much hotter, it accelerates the deterioration both of the corpses, as well as the vegetables. Lididhu, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, which has mountains, and the airflow was better, Lo Chaviluhu Alma. It doesn't have that type of extreme heat, or the heat that causes the accelerated deterioration of the corpses and the vegetables. So they took care of the Bnei Bavel, because that's where it really had an impact, versus the Bnei Yisrael. Gemara says, Ini, is it really true that we do this? Vaha tani rabba bashmo, yachol kishem shima abrim et hashana letzorech, that we are able to put in a leap year for necessity. Necessity could be because of the spring isn't coming out in time to match up with Pesach, meaning that the seasons are off, or because the delay in the maturity of the fruits or the grains that are out there. So we're allowed to create a leap year in order to adjust for these factors. Kach ma'abrim et ha'chodesh letzorech. You would think you have the same right when it comes to a month, that you have the ability to make a month 30 days instead of 29 days in order to adjust for whatever issues you need. Talmud lomar, ha'chodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim, that this month is the rosh chodesh. Hazeh, usually in the Gemara, views the word zeh or hazeh in the Torah to mean that you can point at it, you can see it. So it says, kazeh re'eh v'kadesh. You should see this and be mekadesh lechodesh, meaning that it's all a piyari'ya. There's no room for Chazal to interfere and push the month to a longer month, make it a 30-day month instead of a 29-day month, even though it was possible that the moon was visible, because they need it for whatever reason, to push off Rosh Hashanah or for any other necessity, that is not allowed. So based on the statement of Rabbi Bar Shmuel, there's no possibility to play around with the calendar in terms of the length of the lunar months. So if that's the case, then all what we've been saying to now is meaningless. It all goes by the Ri'ya. There's no way for us to play with the calendar in order to adjust for Lo Adu Rosh or for other necessities that were discussed by Tosafot in the previous Amud. So Amar Rava Lo Kasho. Rava resolves this problem by saying, Kan the Abro, Kan the Kadosho. Depends which adjustment you're trying to make. If you're trying to Abro, to make it a 30-day month instead of a 29-day month, versus Kan the Kadosho, to make it a 29-day month instead of a 30-day month. V'hachi kamar, and this is what it means. Yochol k'shem shim abrim et hashana v'etachodesh litzorech, since you are allowed to, first of all, mima'aber l'shana, make a leap year for necessity, so too, by a month, you can make it 30 days for necessity. Kach mekadshina techodesh litzorech. You would also be able to shorten the month for necessity, make it a 29-day month instead of a 30-day month. Tamalomer, achodesh hazeh lachem, kazeh re'eh v'kadesh. That you can't do that. So, if you want to extend the month from 29 to 30 days, that's a possibility according to Rava, because you have to be able to have seen the moon before you can mekadesh techodesh. So if you've seen the moon on the night of the 29th, meaning the 30th day, which could have been Rosh Chodesh, then you can make the 30th Rosh Chodesh, you can make the 31st Rosh Chodesh. That's fine, because you've already seen the new moon. On the other hand, if the new moon can't be seen until the night of the 30th, meaning the 31st day, then you can't go ahead and make the 30th day Rosh Chodesh, because the moon has yet to be sighted. So Rova's resolution of the statement of Rabbi Bashmuel versus our ability to adjust the calendar and make a rule a 30-day month is that what Rabbi Bar Shmuel was explaining was that you cannot shorten the month. If the month is going to be 30 days based on the sighting of the moon, then you cannot make it a 29-day month. On the other hand, if the month would have been a 29-day month based on the Re'iyah, you can postpone it and push it out to 30 days. So that's what's being described here. What Ula described about being Ma'aber Elul, making a little 30 days instead of 29 days, that's permissible in order to adjust where Rosh Hashanah falls out. On the other hand, when it comes to making a month into a 29-day month, when it really should be a 30-day month, that you can't do, and that's being addressed by Rabbi Bar Shmuel. B'chiha, Damar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And this is similar to what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Ma'imin ala edim, ala chodesh yinireh bizmano labro. When you put pressure on the edim not to testify when they've seen the moon, which would have made it a 29-day month, in order to make it into a 30-day month. But we will not put pressure on the Edim to come to testify and lie and say they saw the moon when they didn't see the moon. So basically, what is being described here is that we can force the Edim to do a Shev Al Taseh, be passive, even though they saw the moon, and if they came and testified, it would have made it Rosh Chodesh on the 30th day, and the previous month would have been 29 days. We can put pressure on the Edim not to testify, to be passive and not testify, and therefore the month will get extended by a day. What we can't do is force the Edim to come in and actively say they saw the moon when they never saw the moon. We would want to do that if the month was really supposed to be a 30-day month, and we're trying to make it into a 29-day month. Well, if it's supposed to be a 30-day month, that means they would never have seen the moon on the night of the 29th, meaning the 30th day, to make that Rosh Chodesh, and now we're trying to pressure them to actively come in and lie. That we can't do. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi corroborates Rova's explanation here, which is that we can force Edim to desist from testifying to a Shev Al Taseh in order for the month to be 30 days. What we can't do is ask the Edim to actively lie in order to make the month shorter. And that's what Rabbi Bar Shmuel said. Rabbi Bar Shmuel says that you're not allowed to adjust the month shorter, but you can adjust the month longer. Mar Sezini, is that really true? V'ashalach le Rabbi Yehuda Nisia, the Rabbi Ami. So here, Rabbi Yehuda Nisia sends to Rabbi Ami. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Nisia is known in other places in the Gemara as the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He is an Amora in the time of Rav and Shmuel. Over here, Tosafot claims that this Rabbi Yehuda Nisia that's being mentioned here is not that Rabbi Yehuda Nisia, based on his interactions with the individuals here and whose control he's under. Rabbi Yodim, Shekol Yamav Shel Rabbi Yochanan, Hayam Lamdeinu. That all the time of Rabbi Yochanan he taught us, Ma'imin al Edim al Chodesh Shelo Nir'eh Bizmano L'Kadesho. That even though the month wasn't seen, you're allowed to push the Edim to come in and testify and be Mekadesh it earlier. Afo Pish L'Ra'u, even though they never saw it. Yomru Ra'inu, they can say we saw it. So based on that, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that we do allow the Edim to lie and say they saw it, even though they didn't see it. So that would not corroborate the way that Rava explained it. So Amar Abaye Lokasho, Habinisan v'tishrei, ha bishar yarche. Depends on which months of the year that you are speaking about. The difference between what Rabbi Yochanan is saying versus what we got out of Rabbi Bar Shmuel and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi has to do which month of the year that you're speaking about. The way that Rashi describes it is that when it comes to the month of Nisan and Tishrei, that the Mo'adot are Toluin behen, then we can move it in either direction. We can move it to postpone it, or we can move it earlier. Whereas for the rest of the months of the year, then the only tzorech that you're allowed to work it for is to make it longer, but not to be makdimit, to make it earlier. So now, the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which says that we do force the Edim to push out and do a Sheva Altas and be passive, that's talking about the rest of the months of the year. We will not force them to lie and say they saw it, but we will force them to desist from speaking and postponing Rosh Chodesh until the 30th day. That's all the months of the year except Nisan and Tishrei. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan's statement is true of Nisan and Tishrei, which is we will allow the Edim to lie in a sense in both directions. We'll allow them to not speak, not tell their testimony and push out the month, make it a 30-day month beforehand, Elul or Adar. On the other hand, we will force them to come in and testify they saw the moon, even though they never saw the moon, in order to make it a 29-day month in Adar or Elul, if we see that to be the necessity for the Moadot. And that is true by Nisan and Tishrei. Rabbi Yochanan's statement was made about Nisan and Tishrei, whereas the statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and that explanation in Rabbah bar Shmuel was said about the remaining months of the year. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot brings Rashi and says, Yesh mefarshim ipcha, that there's some that explain the other way around, that Tishrei and Nisan are governed by that restriction of only making it longer, not making it shorter, because of the Moadot. Therefore, we don't allow them to play around as much with it, versus the other months of the year, where we don't mind if you make it 29 or 30 days by lying, because there's less at stake in those months. The Tosafot brings that alternative, although Rashi explains it the first way that we explained it. So that's Abaye's reconciliation of Rabbi Yochanan's statement vis-a-vis what we saw earlier. On the other hand, Rav Amar, Hadatani Rabba Bar Shmuel Achirim Hi, that the position of Rabba Bar Shmuel is premised on the Achirim. Tanya, Achirim Omrim, the Achirim who we bumped into previously, who say that the months work in the year on an alternate basis, which is 1 month, 30 days, 1 month, 29, 30, 29, in a cycle all the way through without any adjustments. Ein ben atzeret atzeret, vein ben Rosh Hashanah the Rosh Hashanah, ela dalad yamim bilvad. They only have a 4-day interval between Rosh Hashanah of this year and the following Rosh Hashanah, or from Shavuot of this year to the following Shavuot. That has to do with the fact that the lunar year is 354 days. If you alternatingly have 30 and 29 day months in a 12 month year, it will turn out that the lunar year is 354 days. 350 is divisible by 7, so that will give you equal weeks. The extra 4 remainder will cause Rosh Hashanah or Shavuot to be 4 days later, 4 days in the week later than it was in the previous year. So if Rosh Hashanah was on Sunday in the subsequent year, then Rosh Hashanah would fall out on Thursday. And that is because if you have 350 days, it would bring it back to Shabbat. Then Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday would be additional 4 days for the remainder of the lunar year. And that means on the day after would be Rosh Hashanah for the new year on that Thursday. So the differential of that 4 days is in a normal year, in a year in which there are 354 lunar days. V'maita shana mi'uberet, if it's a leap year where you add in a 13th month, chamisha, it's actually a 5-day differential. Now, 29 days is the extra month, according to the Acherim. It's always a leap month of 29 days. In that case, 29 is divisible by 7 up to 28, and then there's 1 day of remainder. So now you have an additional day, which makes it a 5-day differential in a leap year. Or another way to express it is that a leap year is 383 days. And again, there's a 5-day remainder after you divide it into equal weeks of 7. So for them, the differential in days between each year is either 4 days of the week, because it's a normal 12-month year, or if it's a 13-month year, it will be a 5-day differential. So based on the Acherim, there is no playing around with the calendar. You're not allowed to move it up or back. Every month will either be 30 days, then 29, 30, then 29, and there's no adjustment to be made. And therefore now we will take the statement of Rabba bar Shmuel literally, based on what Rav is saying now, which is that you can adjust. You can adjust for the leap year, you cannot adjust the month. That doesn't matter whether it's earlier or later. Now, Rabba bar Shmuel's statement is premised on the Acherim. So since he's premised on the Acherim, other opinions like that of Rabbi Yochanan can be premised on another Shita that does not hold like the Acherim, that you go exactly with these 30-29 months throughout the year. Now, a good example of that is the year in which we are found currently. In the year 5774, Tavshin Ayin Dalid. This year, it will turn out that actually Rosh Hashanah, which fell out on a Thursday last year, will also fall out on a Thursday this year, which means that there was a 7-day weekday differential between the 2 years. Now, this year was a leap year, so we added in an extra month to the year. So besides the standard 354-day normal lunar year, which would leave a 4-day remainder, we have an additional day of remainder because it's a leap year this year, and we added in a 29-day month of Adar. So that added in an additional day to the calendar, which gave us a 5-day differential. But this year, it's actually 7 days. And that is because within the Jewish calendar, the months of Cheshvan and Kislev are flexible months. They are months that can be Chaserim, both of them Chaserim, both of them Malay, or one Malay and one Chaser. It happens to be that this year happens to be the longest possible Jewish year there can be because both Cheshvan and Kislev were Malayim. They were full months. So in a normal year where you would have the alternating months, you would have it be that there are 6 months that are Malay and 6 months that are Chaser, and that would lead to a 354-day lunar year and a 4-day differential. In a leap year, it would actually turn out that that leap month that is added in according to the Acherim is a 29-day month. That means that you have one more month that is Chaser. That would be in a 13-month year of a leap year, according to the Acherim, it would turn out that you have 7 months that are Chaserim and 6 months that are Mileim. In that case, you end up with a 5-day differential. So that's our year here was a leap year, so we should end up with a 5-day differential. But in our year this year, both Cheshvan and Kislev were Mileim. So based on that, that means that Tishrei was a Malay month, then Cheshvan was a Malay month, Kislev was a Malay month, and therefore the reason that there is a 7-day difference this year between Rosh Hashanah to Rosh Hashanah, or basically exactly a week, is because our leap year, unlike the Acherim, our leap month is 30 days long and not 29 days long. Other Aleph in our year this year was 30 days, which is the leap month, and not 29 days. And so because of that, we actually have a 2-day differential versus a 1-day differential in a leap year, or in our leap year, there are 384 days in the lunar year rather than the 383 of the Acherim. And that would make it a 6-day differential for us versus the 5-day differential of the Acherim. In addition to that, this year for us has both Cheshvan and Kislev be full months or 30-day months. Since both of them are Malay, that means that we have one additional month in the calendar that was Malay versus a year where we alternate between Malay and Chaser. Because of that, we add on an additional day, which gives us the 7-day differential. Well, 7 days is a week, and that means that the day that Rosh Hashanah fell out on last year will also be the day that Rosh Hashanah falls out on in this year. And that is because our year, or our leap year this year, was 385 days long. Or in essence, our year was divisible by 7, or 55 weeks long. And so that's the explanation of how this works based on the Acherim, and that's what happened in our calendar this year. Now, Rav Dimi Minar Da Matnei Ipcha. Rav Dimi Adar had the statement just the other way around, which is, Maimin Alaidim Alachodesh Shaloni Rebizmano Likadashon, that we do force the Edim to lie and say that they saw the moon, even though they never saw it. But if the moon was seen on the night of the 29th, meaning on the 30th day, and that should have been Rosh Chodesh, we don't force them to be passive and not testify to allow us to extend the month after 30 days. My time, what's the reasoning behind this position? Now, we understand the reasoning behind the other position, which is we'd rather they didn't be passive and not testify versus asking them to actively lie. So in that case, we would say we could force them not to speak in order to extend the month out to 30 days, but we won't force them to come and lie in order to make it a 29-day month. On the other hand, the way that Rav Dimi Meir Narado has it, it's the opposite way around. We won't ask them to be passive, but we will ask them to be active. So why would we ask the Edim to actively lie versus be passive and not say anything? So the Gemara says, that's because, Hai Mechzik Hashikra, V'Halo Mechzik Hashikra. Because it depends on what the other people can see. If the Edim saw the moon on the night of the 29th, meaning on the beginning of the 30th day, and that should have been Rosh Chodesh, they're probably not the only people who saw the moon. That means that other people out there saw the moon, and now the Rabbanon or the courts are going to decide they want to make it a 30-day month. They're going to say, we're going to wait until tomorrow. But people saw the moon, and they know that it's Rosh Chodesh already, and yet they're pushing off Rosh Chodesh, so it looks like it's a lie. Looks like they're not keeping Rosh Chodesh correctly. On the other hand, if the moon was not visible to other people, and then Beit Din comes along and says today was Rosh Chodesh, people will assume we didn't see the moon, but someone else did see the moon, and therefore it's not Mechzei Keshikra. What we don't want is that people outside of the court look at the court and know that the court is not doing what is truthful or what is right. Meaning that we allow the court to adjust the reality when nobody else can figure out what they're doing, versus we won't allow them to do it when it's against the reality that people are experiencing around them. All of this is connected to a Gemara later on, which tells us that Chazal have the power, even if they make a mistake, even if they intentionally make a mistake, to be koveya when the mo'adot are. That is given into the hands of Bnei Israel, and the Beit Din has the right or the power to establish when the mo'adot are. Now again, that is even if they make a mistake and they do it at the wrong time, and afilu mezidim, or even if they do it intentionally, they are granted that power. The mo'adim and the Kiddush HaChodesh is handed by Hashem into our hands in order to establish when it is. And therefore, Beit Din can make these decisions, even quote-unquote against the reality of what would be the Kiddush HaChodesh of Pi Ariyah. And the question here is about how we deal with the Edim versus the ability of Beit Din to do something and not look foolish. So the way that Rav Dimi Minardoa has it, the most important thing when the Beit Din goes to change the quote-unquote reality is that it shouldn't look like Beit Din is doing something that is completely wrong or obviously wrong. As long as nobody else can figure out what Beit Din did, then it's okay to subvert the truth and change the Kviut HaKodesh. On the other hand, the way that Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi had the statement, it has to do with our relationship with the Edim. We can ask the Edim to desist from testifying. We can't have Edim come in and actively lie. Because if we're telling Edim to actively lie, the Edim who come to testify are going to know that. They're going to know that the whole thing is fabricated. And then somehow that will diminish the standing of the court. So both of them are worried about the standing of the court. As the question is, we are allowed to adjust. So now, since we can adjust, how does this the court do this without losing its mamad, its standing in the eyes of the people? So Rabbi Shua ben Levi says it's most important that we don't have people lying actively in order to change the time, because that for sure makes it look like the court is a farce instead of being something that is truthful. On the other hand, Rabbi Dimi Minardoa says no. The question is vis-a-vis the people or the public at large. The Edim that come understand what we're trying to do, and therefore we push them to testify, and they understand their people are picked from amongst those who understand what's trying to be done here. We can explain it to them what we're trying to do over here. But the Hamunam, we can't explain to them what we're doing, and therefore the court standing vis-a-vis the Hamunam is more important, because if they change something, it's obvious that they're doing something that's against the reality, then the Hamunam will lose their respect for the court, and therefore we won't allow it to happen. So that's the question between the two statements, meaning that the power of the court is granted is clear. The question is, what are we worried about? Are we worried about the court standing in the eyes of the Edim who are asking to testify falsely? Or are we more worried about the court standing with the Hamunam? And the two perspectives each relate to one of those issues in terms of the court standing. Amar Shmuel, Yechilna Litgune Lekula Gola. So Shmuel makes a statement that I could take care of Rosh Chodesh and the sending of the Mo'adot for Hal the Gula, and they wouldn't have to keep 2 days of Yom Tov, because I'm an expert at astronomy, and we know that from other places in the Gemara that Shmuel was very aware of the astronomy and had a good sense of the positioning of the stars as well as the moon. And Shmuel says, based on that, I could make the calculations and establish when Rosh Chodesh should be, when Rosh Hashanah should be, when the Mo'adot should be, without any problem. So Amalei Abba Avua the Rabbi Simlai, the Shmuel. So Abba, the father of Rabbi Simlai, says to Shmuel, Yada Mar Hai Milta, do you know this statement, which is, Tanya, we have a Braita that talks in a cryptic manner. Now, this Braita is going to lead us through the remainder of today's daf into what is an extremely difficult daf. That's both because of the way that the Rishonim explain it vis-a-vis the astronomical reality, as well as the fact that the remainder of this daf is really koveya for us, how we set Rosh Chodesh based on the Molad, as well as it might have implications as far as the international dateline. So the remainder of this amud here has a lot at stake, because it does establish the way that we make Rosh Chodesh, as well as it may impact where the international halachic dateline is. But the problem is that the whole Gemara itself is cryptic, and Rishonim are battling to explain what is happening here. And then we have to deal with that in terms of the astronomical reality of how it really does happen. The Tanya, Seder HaYibur, Nolad Kodem Chatzot, or Nolad Achar Chatzot. The cryptic Braita says that the Sod HaYibur, the secret of the new moon, is that if it happened before noon, or if it happened after noon. Amalei, lo. Shmuel says, I don't know what that Braita means. I don't know what it's talking about. So Amalei, Midahalo Yodamar, Igamile Achraneita, Delo Yadamar. Abba, the father of Rabbi Simlai, his only point to Shmuel is, here is this Braita about the Sod HaYibur. You don't understand it. That means that your understanding of the astronomy and the Molad and the setting of the calendar is not deep enough in order for you to make a statement that you could fix the Gola or you could fix the calendar. You're missing this piece of knowledge. If you're missing this piece of knowledge, it's probably true that you're missing other pieces of knowledge. And since you're not an expert, you can't establish the calendar based on your own knowledge. His point being that there is more to the setting of it than just knowing the astronomy. There is a certain amount of misora that comes here, and that misora helps you to deal with the astronomical realities. Kisalik Rabbi Zera, Shalk Luchu. When Rabbi Zera went up, he sent back to them, Tzarech Shei Laila V'yom Min Achadash. The night and the day have to be from the new moon. That's number one statement of Rabbi Zera, that the night and the day have to be from the new moon. Again, it's a cryptic statement. It's not clear what he's saying. V'zu Shamar Abba Avua D'Rabbi Simlai Mechashvin Et Holadato. This has to do with the setting of the new moon based on the Molad, which is Nolad Kodem Chatzot. If the Molad is prior to Chatzot, B'yadua Shnira Samoch T'Shkiyat Chama. It's clear that it'll be seen close to sunset. Lolandad Kodem Chatzot. If the new Molad was not prior to Chatzot, B'yadua Shlo Nira Samoch T'Shkiyat Chama. It's clear that it was not seen near sunset. The Mai Nafkamino. Why does this make a difference, this piece of information? In order to refute the testimony of the witnesses. If the witnesses come and tell us they saw the moon, and the molad was after noon on that day, then we know that they're lying because there's no way they could have seen the moon that evening if the molad happened after chatzot. On the other hand, if the molad happened before noontime, then it is possible that the Edim saw the moon on that night. Now Rabbi Zera makes a third statement, which is, I'm Rabbi Zera, I'm Rav Nachman, Chav Dalet Shayim Mikhsei Sihara. So that the moon is covered or out of visibility for 24 hours. Lididan, for us in Bavel, Shit Me'atika, six from the old moon is not visible. V'tam Nesare Mechadato, and 18 hours from the new moon. Lididhu, for them in Eretz Yisrael, Shit Mechadato, they don't see the 6 hours of the new moon. V'tam Nesare Me'atika, and 18 hours from the old moon. The Mai Nafkamina, again, why is this information relevant? Amravashi Akhushe Sade comes to refute the testimony of the witnesses that when they saw the new moon, we can determine if they really were able or capable of seeing the new moon, or if the old moon was visible, we'll have a way to know that they're not telling them the truth. Okay, now the Gemara is going to clarify the first statement of Rabbi Zera. Amramar, it's Rikshe Laila Biyom Min Achadash, that the night and the day have to be from the new moon. Minolan. How do we know that that's true? Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Merv Aderv Tishbdu Shabbat Chem, from night to nightfall. Reish Lakish Amar, Ad Ha'echad V'esrim Lachodesh Ba'erev, until the 21st day in the evening. Mai Benayu, what's the difference between these two opinions? Ba'yomar Mashma'ut Torshim Yig Benayu, there is no Nafkamina Lalacha between them, but rather it's just where they learn the Pasuk from. The Pasuk tells us that the day begins at nightfall, and therefore it goes from nightfall until the following nightfall. So that's a full day. So they're only arguing about how do we know that? Do we know that from Mi Erev Ad Erev Tishbedu Shabbatchem? Or do we know that from Ad Yom Echad V'Esrim Lachodesh Ba'erev? That's the way Abai learns it. Rav Amar Chatzot Laila Yike Ben Ayu. Difference between them is midnight. When does the new day start for the new moon? And that means that does it start immediately at sunset? Meaning immediately at nightfall? And that would based on the Pasuk from Mi Erev Ad Erev Tishbedu Shabbatchem. Tells you the night begins at the Erev and then ends at the subsequent Erev. That's the 24-hour period that is relevant to the new moon. On the other hand, the way that Rish Lakish explains it, which is Ad Yom Echad V'Esrim Lachodesh Be'erev, is telling you when you have to eat matzah. As Rashi tells us that with regards to matzah, on the first night of Pesach, there is a chovah, an obligation to eat matzah. That obligation coincides with the eating of the Korban Pesach, and that chuvah lasts from nightfall until midnight. From midnight and onward on the first night of Pesach, until the end of Pesach, eating of matzah is a reshut, it is completely optional. So based on that, then that optional period begins on Chatzot, midnight of that night, and then extends until the night of the 21st. Based on that, it means that the time period that starts, in terms of counting, is from midnight. So Rava says there is a difference, there's a 6-hour difference between them. As Rashi notes over here, that if, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the moon was seen on the night, that means within the next 24-hour period, you will not be able to see the new moon. On the other hand, according to Reish Lakish, if the moon was seen on the night before Chatzot, then it's still possible to see the new moon on the next night. Whereas, if it was seen after Chatzot, then it would not be possible to see the new moon. Or, in other terms, the machloket is whether the moon disappears from view for 24 hours or for 18 hours. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it disappears for 24 hours because it's from that nightfall until the following nightfall. If the old moon is visible at that nightfall, you will definitely not see the new moon on the next nightfall. But then for Reish Lakish, it's only 18 hours. So therefore, even if the moon was visible in the first 6 hours of the night until midnight, then you could still see the new moon on the subsequent night because you have a full 18 hours, which is enough time for the new moon to come around. Okay, now we're going to go back and explain all that was said over here. Part of this has to do with understanding the astronomy, and the other part has to do with the Rishonim's interpretation of that astronomy. So the first thing to understand is why the moon changes sizes over the month. We know that the moon goes around the earth, and the lunar month, which is the amount of time that it takes for the moon to do a full revolution around the earth, is the lunar month, or 29.5 days and 793 chalakim. It's a little over 29.5 days. As the moon goes around the earth, then it changes where it is relative to the sun. To make it easy, for instance, middle of the lunar month, when the moon is full, then the moon is on the other side of the earth. That means that the earth is between the sun and the moon. Since the earth is between the sun and the moon, the sun is shining on the full face of the moon, and people can then look at the moon and see the full face of the moon because it is on the other side of the earth, and we have complete visibility of the moon in the full moon. Now, obviously, the sun and the earth and the moon are in one line, but not on the same plane. If they were on the same plane, then the earth would block the light of the sun towards the moon, and that would create a lunar eclipse. So they are in the same line, but not on the same plane. And therefore, the sun is on one side, the earth is in the middle, and then the moon's on the other side. That's when the moon is completely visible, and that's when it is a full moon. Whereas, if the moon is between the earth and the sun, then you won't see the moon at all. And that's when the Molada Levana, or the new moon, takes place. When the moon is between the sun and the earth, the sun that is shining on the face of the moon is completely away from the earth, because we can only see what's called the dark side of the moon at that point in time, because the sun, then the moon, then the earth. So when the sun is shining on the moon, we can't see where the sun is shining on the moon because the moon is between us and the sun. Once again, that's only in a line. We're in the same line. We're not on the same plane. If you're on the same plane, then you would have a solar eclipse because the moon would block the light of the sun. That's when you get a solar eclipse. But on a monthly basis, that doesn't happen. We're in the same line, meaning that the earth, then the moon, then the sun. And therefore, the moon is not visible to us. That's at the beginning of the month. That's when the moon is completely invisible to us. The Molada Levana, the birth of the Levana, is the point in time in which the new moon becomes visible. When the new moon starts to move away from being directly between us and the sun, as it slowly moves, we're able then to see a part of the light that is shining on the face of the moon. Again, it keeps moving until finally it's on the other side of the earth where we can see the whole lighted face of the moon. And then it continues the rest of the month. Again, we see a diminishing part of the moon as it goes around the earth. So the moon's revolution around the earth determines how much of the moon that we can see. That's the first thing you have to understand. In terms of the full moon is when the moon is on the other side of the earth. We are between the sun and the moon. And the moon is completely invisible when the moon is between us and the sun. And then in the interim time periods, the moon is either waxing or waning, depending if it's moving away from the sun towards the other side of the earth, or is it now starting to move back towards the sun and away from the other side of the earth. The other thing to understand is that at the beginning of the month, the moon is only visible right after sunset. And generally towards the end of the month, the moon is only visible right before sunrise. And that has to do with the phenomenon of how close the moon is to the sun. Meaning, as the moon goes around the Earth, it is going around the Earth slower than, quote-unquote, the sun is going around the Earth. This is all about the perspective of man towards looking out on the sun. It's obviously that the Earth is going around the sun, not the sun around the Earth. But the traveling speed of the moon is at a slower rate than, quote-unquote, the sun is going around the Earth. Because of that, as we move through the month, that differential in speed causes the moon to move further and further away from the sun. And then towards the end of the month, it starts to, quote-unquote, catch up with the sun. So that's what causes the differential of where the moon is relative to the sun. At the beginning of the month, where at the point of Molad, or right before the Molad at the conjunction, when the moon is lined up exactly with the sun between the Earth, and we can't see the moon at all, at that point, they're equal. As they start to move away from it, there is slowly a delay that causes the moon to move further away from the sun. And now, in continuing to understand the moon's positioning relative to the sun, if we think that the moon makes it around the entire Earth over the period of a lunar month, let's assume that's approximately 30 days, and it makes the 360-degree revolution around the Earth. If I do that, 360 divided by 30 days leaves you about 12 degrees a day. That means that the moon is moving about 12 degrees a day further away from the sun, so that by the middle of the month, it's 180 degrees, 15 days into the month, it's 180 degrees away from the sun. Again, as we mentioned before, it has to do with the perspective that the moon seems to be going around the Earth slower than the sun. And so that on the first day of the month, the sun rises and the moon falls behind the sun by about 12 degrees. The sun, which is moving from east to west, in our perspective, the moon is falling behind that by about 12 degrees. So it's in the eastern side, but falling 12 degrees behind. And that will continue to widen that gap until 180 degrees. And then eventually it will look like the moon is approaching the sun, even though it's just continuing to fall back more. But it will look like the moon is approaching the sun. So that, therefore, in the beginning of the month, it looks like the moon is lagging to the eastern side of the sun. And then as you approach the end of the month, it looks like the moon is approaching the sun from the western side. This has the effect of two phenomena. Number one is, at the beginning of the month, the moon is only visible very close to sunset on the western horizon, because by sunrise, since it's trailing a little to the east of the sun, by the time the sun's up, it's too bright out for you to have visibility of the moon. Only towards sunset, once the sun has gone down and the moon is trailing a little behind it, will it be visible. The opposite is true towards the end of the month, where the moon is trailing a little to the west of the sun, and therefore at sunset it won't be visible, because the moon would have gone down before the sun, and therefore would not be visible. But in the opposite is true in the sunrise towards the end of the month, since the moon is just west of the sun, therefore it can be seen right before the sunrise, where the moon is just west of the sun, coming up a little before the sun does, rising drop before the sun. The other thing that affects the Molad is that the sun is extremely bright. And therefore, the visibility of the moon depends both on its angle, which is how far it is away from the sun relative to us on Earth, as well as the brightness of the sun. So the brightness of the sun will make it impossible for us to see the moon for a window of time in which the moon is between us and the sun. The question that is at hand here is, how far does it have to move off the zero angle in order for it to be visible? Rashi claims in his interpretation here, we will first explain Rashi, and then afterwards we'll explain it through the eyes of the Baal HaMor. Now, the reason we'll use the Baal HaMor is because his explanation will launch us into a secondary issue, which is that of the international dateline. Rashi explains here that the old moon is not visible for the 6 hours prior to the Molad, and the new moon is not visible for the 6 hours after the Molad. So Rashi claims that after the Molad, the moon is visible after 6 hours, or after it's moved, based on our calculation, 1/4 of a day, or 3 degrees away from the sun. Now, that is a very difficult explanation, because in general, most of the Rishonim believe that to the naked eye, new moon cannot be visible for up to 18 hours after the Molad. Now, with the naked eye, with optimal conditions, that number has been brought down a little bit. But even with a telescope, the moon or the new moon can only be seen up to about 12 hours after the molad. Part of that issue can be explained by the fact that the astronomical molad and the halachic molad are not exactly in tune, because over the year, based on the position of the earth and the rotation of the earth, the astronomical molad and the halachic molad actually move a little bit, and they are skewed off of each other, which can cause anywhere from a 6 to 12 hour skew from the astronomical molad to the actual molad. Over the 12-month period, it averages out, and therefore the molad will be very close to the astronomical molad after you've completed a 12-month cycle. But given that skew, it is possible then, if the moon is visible after 18 hours, and we have a skew of 6 to 12 hours between the astronomical and the halachic molad, it is possible at times that you could see the moon 6 hours after the molad. That would explain Rashi's position. In addition, Rashi claims here that at the beginning of the month, the moon is always visible on the southwestern side of the sky. At the end of the month, it's always visible on the southeastern side of the sky. Now, as far as the west and east is concerned, we've already explained that that's true, that in the beginning of the month, the moon will be visible near sunset on the western horizon, and that towards the end of the month, the moon will be visible on the eastern horizon right before sunrise. The question of why Rashi mentioned south is very difficult, because for us in the northern hemisphere, it actually depends on what time of the year. During the summertime period, the sun rises on the northern side of the horizon and sets on the northern side of the horizon on the east and western sides, respectively. In the wintertime, it does the opposite. It rises and sets on the southern side of the horizon of east and west. So it actually moves by the time of the year, because the moon will be visible where the sun is located. Just like the sun is on the northern side of the horizon during the summertime, so too the moon will be visible on the northern side. And the same is true with the sunset on the northern side. And then in the wintertime, we're the opposite, on the southern side. Yet Rashi says it's always visible on the southern side. That is a big difficulty in Rashi. The one explanation that gives some credence to that position is that we explained before that the moon at the beginning of the month is trailing the sun. It's slightly to the west of the sun. And therefore, once the sun sets, since the moon is a little behind it, it is south relative to the sunset. And the same is true at the end of the month on the eastern horizon, since again the moon is rising slightly before the sun is rising, it always appears to be slightly south of the sun. So relative to the sun, the moon always appears to be more south on the horizon than the sun is. That's the only viable explanation of that position of Rashi, since Rashi seems to say that it's always on the southern side. Now, most of these calculations, and when we continue to speak here, we're going to speak about it in the terms of the equinox. And then in the equinox, again, on the northern hemisphere, it would be rising and setting in the middle of the horizon. Rashi says here that there's a difference between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, because Bavel is further east than Eretz Yisrael. The truth is that it should make no difference how far east or west you are in terms of your position, because we all see the same sky, just at different intervals. But the answer might lie in the way that the molad is calculated. The molad is calculated by the point in time when the molad takes place over Yerushalayim. And that means whatever time it is over Yerushalayim when the molad is, then to east of Yerushalayim, the molad is actually taking place at a later time in the day. So for instance, if Bavel is an hour, a half an hour east of Eretz Yisrael, then if the molad takes place at a certain given time in Eretz Yisrael, it will actually be an hour later in Bavel. And that might be the explanation of why there is a difference between B'nai Bavel and B'nai Eretz Yisrael. Rashi says that the moon is visible 6 hours after the molad. So if the molad was exactly at noon time, that means that the moon would then be visible that night right after sunset. It would have to be a little bit of a differential. It would actually have to be that the molad is slightly before noontime. And then it would be possible to view the moon in Eretz Yisrael at sunset on that night. Therefore, in Bavel, that would not be true. Because if it was noontime in Eretz Yisrael when the molad took place, or a couple minutes before noon, and therefore the moon would be visible that night in Eretz Yisrael, for B'nai Bavel, who are a half an hour or an hour east of Eretz Yisrael, their time would actually be a half an hour later. That means the molad for them was at 12:30 or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That means 6 hours later is already 6:30 or 7 o'clock at night, which would have mean the moon would have already set by that time period when it's 6 hours later, and they would not have visibility of the new moon. Therefore, when the new moon happens before Chatzot in Eretz Yisrael, the new moon might be visible 6 hours later in Eretz Yisrael, but the new moon will not be visible for Bnei Bavel until 18 hours later. And that is because in the first 6 hours, it'll be too late in the night. The moon would already set by the time it would have been visible for them. Therefore, they have to wait an additional 12 hours until it will be visible for them, because that'd be right before sunrise. There might be a small possibility of them viewing the new moon. And therefore, for Bnei Bavel, it will be 18 hours before they see the new moon. On the other hand, for them, in terms of the old moon, since for them the Molad took place afternoon, there's more than 6 hours away from the old moon that was at sunrise on that morning. Since they are more than 6 hours away from the sunrise on that morning, it was possible that on that morning of the day of the Molad, they still saw the old moon because it was more than 6 hours away. And that's what it means for Bnei Bavel. They see the old moon for 6 hours prior to the Molad, but they don't see the new moon until 18 hours afterwards. On the other hand, the reverse will be true for Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, where the Molad took place more than 6 hours before the end of the day, then the moon will be visible right around sunset that day. They will see the new moon 6 hours after the Molad. On the other hand, since the Molad takes place less than 6 hours away from sunrise, when the moon is visible at the end of the month, they will not be able to see the old moon at the sunrise time. The only time they would have been able to see that old moon is 18 hours before or right around sunset on the previous day. And that's the way to explain this view of Rashi. The view in the end comes out at the conclusion that if the Molad takes place before Chatzot on that day, then that day could be Rosh Chodesh, because right before sunset the moon might be visible on that day, and because of that, Rosh Chodesh could be that day. On the other hand, if the Molad is after Chatzot, then there's not a window of 6 hours by which you could see the moon, because by the time the 6 hours expires, the moon would already set on the first day. Remember, the moon sets very quickly on the first day of the month, and therefore, by the time it would be visible into the 6 hours after the Molad, it would no longer be in the horizon because it had set already because of its proximity to the sun. Now, based on that, we can explain the first statement of Rabbi Zeira, which is, if the Molad is before Chatzot, that day could be Rosh Chodesh. If the Molad is after Chatzot, then that day cannot be Rosh Chodesh. And the period of the 24 hours where the moon is not visible is the combination of the old moon and the new moon. The new moon or the old moon, depending where you're located, will be visible 6 hours before the Molad or 6 hours after the Molad. But there'll be an additional 18 hours where the other one is not visible. So even though for Bnei Bavel, the old moon was still visible 6 hours before the Molad, the new moon for them won't be visible till 18 hours later. Then from Bnei Eretz Yisrael, where the new moon was visible 6 hours after the Molad, the old moon would have been only visible 18 hours before, and that's the explanation of the three statements of Rabbi Zeira on this daf. That is the explanation of Rashi in this Gemara. Now from here, we'll move over to the Baal HaMor. The Baal HaMor gives a different description, and this is based on where the sun was at creation. He says that the sun at creation was at Chatzot, at noontime, over Eretz Yisrael, directly over Yerushalayim. So if we were to divide up the known landmass at that time, which was basically called from China all the way to the end of Western Europe, and Eretz Yisrael is considered to be in the middle of that Yishuv. Now based on that, that means that 12 hours prior, the sun rose around China. It was noontime in China when the sun rose in Eretz Yisrael. And by the time that the sun is midday over Eretz Yisrael, it is setting over China. And what the Baal HaMor explains is that the new day starts from the point in time where the sun is over Eretz Yisrael at Chatzot, which means anything to the east, 6 hours east of Eretz Yisrael, is considered to be part of that same day that Eretz Yisrael is in. But the sun, more than 6 hours east of Eretz Yisrael, is already setting. And that is the previous day. So, based on that, if the Molad takes place at noontime in Eretz Yisrael, it will take now an additional 18 hours for it to reach back to the point where the sun is rising over those places that are east of China, or more than 6 hours eastward. So based on that, he says that if the Molad takes place prior to Chatzot in Yerushalayim, that means that 18 hours later, the first time that the moon will be visible right before sunset in those locations, the beginning of the day. And then you'll have a 24-hour period where the new moon would have been visible or extant for those areas. So based on that, he reconciles the three statements of Rabbi Zeira in this manner. That if the Molad takes place before Chatzot in Eretz Yisrael, that means that someplace more than 6 hours east of Eretz Yisrael, then we'll be able to see the new moon that day, because they will see it right before their sunset on that day, the same day. And then they will have a 24-hour period in which that new moon is available to them, or would have been in its new state for them. That means somewhere in the world, the moon exists for a 24-hour period. And that's that other statement of Rabbi Zeira. And the statement about the 6 hours and the 18 hours has to do with exactly that. That if it's prior to Chatzot, then there's more than 18 hours left in the day, which gives you the possibility of the new moon being seen still on that day, close to sunset somewhere in the world, because you're only less than 6 hours into the day. On the other hand, if you cross over Chatzot, where you drop more than 6 hours in the day, that means that there's less than 18 hours left in the day. That means that nowhere in the world on that given day will the moon be visible. And that means that the moon and Chidusho can't exist anywhere in the world for that 24-hour period, and it won't be Rosh Chodesh that day. So our practice today, based both on the explanation of Rashi or the Baal HaMor, is that when they announced in Shul the Molad, if the Molad is prior to noontime, then that day could be Rosh Chodesh. If the Molad is announced after noontime, meaning that the Molad will take place after noontime, then that day will not be Rosh Chodesh, the next day will be Rosh Chodesh. You'll notice in Shul, it's actually true currently, that doesn't always work. Sometimes Rosh Chodesh is off by a day or two, and that has to do with the adjustments that we make in the calendar. So even though, for instance, it was Bor Chatzot, and that day should have been Rosh Chodesh, we may not celebrate Rosh Chodesh the next day or the day after. The same is true of if the Molad is after Chatzot, then we might not celebrate Rosh Chodesh the next day, we might only do it 2 days later because of the skew in the calendar. Like, for instance, this year, you will see, next time they announce the Molad, you'll see that there is still a skew in the calendar because we are adjusting the calendar to move around the Yomim Tovim. Now, from the Baal HaMor, we're going to launch into the issue of the international dateline. Before we start the international dateline issue, the issue has really only became much more relevant in the modern era. That is because of two reasons. One reason is, number one, if you believe that the world is flat, then you're not going to have a problem in terms of when the day begins. Because since the world is flat, there's a point in the east where the world ends, and there's a point in the west where the world ends. And since the sun rises from the eastern side, we would assume that the day starts from the most eastern point on the flat earth and ends on the most western point on the flat earth. And because of that, that is considered to be one day. Everybody's under the same horizon. And based on that, everybody would have the same day based on the first point east all the way to the furthest point west. Now that is true if the earth is flat. Now it happens to be that the belief that the earth was flat really came into vogue in the Middle Ages or in the Dark Ages. For prior to that time, around the time of Ptolemy and even earlier, there was a belief that the earth was round, but with one difference that we have today, which is that anything between the most eastern part of civilization, again we use China on the east, and the western part of Western Europe was ocean. The only thing that was there from either side was ocean. Again, there's no problem in terms of determining or deciding where the day begins because there's nothing on the other side of the earth. So therefore, the most eastern part of civilization most likely will be the beginning of the day, and the most western side will be the end of that same day. When you run into a problem of an international dateline, it's when you have the combination of two things. One is looking at the earth as a sphere. As soon as you have a sphere or a circle, you have to make some point that is considered to be the determining point of the start. And that has to be decided somewhere. Now, it would be easy to decide again if most of the earth existed between China and Western Europe and there was nothing on the other side, then it would be no problem in terms of setting where that point is because the landmass all exists in one area. On the other hand, as soon as you have land masses that are east of China or on the other side of the earth, all of a sudden now you run into a problem as to where to set that line that determines where the day begins. Because every day is moving. The sun is rising east and then setting on the west, which is considered to be the farthest point east and which is considered to be the farthest point west now, because you have a sphere and we have to pick a point where that will be the determining point of where the new day starts. That was determined by the International Meridian Conference in 1884 to be 180 degrees away from Greenwich. England was the great empire at that time, so Greenwich was considered to be the state zero for time. And so 180 degrees away from that, the other half of the earth was considered to be the international dateline, and that was how the international dateline was set. But as far as Aloha is concerned, where is that international dateline? And obviously has many nafkaminot, including now that we're counting the sphera, as to which day of the sphera is, which day is Shabbat. And there's a lot to say about the Aloha ramifications. I'm just going to talk about the issue of setting the international dateline. Many cite this Balamor as a source for the fact that the international dateline is 6 hours east of Yerushalayim. Because the Balamor here says that 6 hours east of Yerushalayim is on the same day as Yerushalayim. Anything more than 6 hours east of Yerushalayim is actually the previous day. And that's how he explains the Soda Ibur here in Rabbi Zeira. Based on that, many believe that 6 hours east of Yerushalayim is considered to be the international dateline. That is the position of both the Chazon Ish and the Rav Mibrisk. That 6 hours east of Yerushalayim is considered to be the international dateline. The difference between them is that the Rav Mibrisk believes that 6 hours east of Yerushalayim is the international dateline, no matter where it falls. And its truth is that 6 hours east of Yerushalayim is not all the way out to the Pacific Ocean. It is actually on towards the eastern edge of China. And that means that technically you could be standing in a place in China, and you can walk a little to the west, and then a little to the east. If you walk a little to the east, it would be the previous day. If you walk a little to the west, it would be the next day. The Chazon Ish saw that as being problematic, the same way that the people who established the international dateline did, which was that the international dateline is not a straight line. It tries to avoid splitting landmasses or countries in half. And the Chazon Ish says the same thing, that we move as far as east possible without cutting countries in half. So therefore, basically, the 6 hours east would be the eastern coast of China, and that would be the determining factor of the international dateline. Even though there are parts of Russia that are east of that point, he still said that that was the line to the east, the 6 hours east. That would put Japan on the other side of the halachic dateline. There are other opinions that derive from the fact that people did not see Yerushalayim as the center of the earth, but rather skewed to the west. The Rambam, who follows the Ptolemaic maps, who said that Yerushalayim was actually 24 degrees west of the center point of civilization, his international dateline would actually be 114 degrees east of Yerushalayim, or 90 degrees from east of the center of civilization. So based on that, the Rambam's international dateline, calculated based on these factors, would actually be 114 degrees east of Yerushalayim. There are, based on the Sefer B'nai Tzion, where he determines that Gan Eden, where the original sun and the center of civilization was, is actually 45 degrees east of Yerushalayim. In addition to that, additional 7.2 degrees that he adds for the movement of the sun during the time that it's moving through the Rakia, he comes up with the line that would be 142.2 degrees east of Yerushalayim. All these opinions are basically arguing about where was the sun found at midday over the center of the Yishuv or at the point of creation, and then what is 6 hours east of that point? The only exception to that understanding that the sun was over the middle of the Yishuv at the time of creation is brought by the Seder Olam, which is a Sefer that was written by a Talmud of the Rosh, who wrote an extensive Sefer about astronomy and halacha. In there he argues that the sun at the beginning of creation was actually below the earth, and that's why sunrise started at that moment on the eastern side, and that only later on was there a social agreement that sunset would be the beginning of the day. At the moment of creation, it was actually sunrise that was the beginning of the day, and that it was a later innovation of the Torah and an agreement that it would be that sunset would be the beginning of the day. But based on that, he also has an opinion about where the actual dateline is based on the fact that the sunrise was around China at the moment of creation. That was the start of the day. Other opinion that was espoused by Rav Michletu Kuczynski was that Yerushalayim should be considered the center of the earth, and 108 degrees away from that should be considered the international dateline. Similar to what they did with Greenwich, England in the Meridian Conference, the same thing should apply to Eretz Yisrael, which is if Eretz Yisrael is the center of the earth, and the earth is 360 degrees, 180 degrees east or west, which is the other side of the earth, should be considered to be the international dateline, or exactly opposite Eretz Yisrael. That dateline would fall out east of Hawaii, and actually would cut off the western side of Alaska and put it on the other side of the dateline. Rav Tichajinsky as well is willing to accept that maybe we have to move the dateline so that pieces like Alaska don't get cut off from their landmass. Menachem Kasher in Hapardes, which was in Shvat, Tavshun Yud Dalet, or February 1954, makes an argument for the fact that the international dateline should actually be determined by the migration of the individuals from the landmasses that they were on. Meaning that the eastern side of China, as they migrated to the east, as far as they reached to the east, should be the point in time where that day is still considered to be the same day as it is in China. And from the North American continent, as they moved further west, that should be the determining factor of the tail end of the day. And whenever those two migrations meet, that should be the determination of the international dateline. He claims that that is somewhere around or very close to where the actual international dateline is set. He has his arguments there. The article is extremely lengthy and has a summary of all the positions, as well as the fact that he presented his position to the Chazon Ish close to his death, and the Chazon Ish asked him to come back because he was very interested. The Chazon Ish had also written an article on this issue, and Rav Nachum Kasher believed that the Chazon Ish was in the process of possibly accepting his opinion, but the Chazon Ish passed away before Rav Nachum Kasher was able to get back to the Chazon Ish to hear his reflections on the article after he had his initial comments on it. So he never got that approval or skama from the Chazon Ish, but he argues that he thinks that the Chazon Ish was convinced by his position. Now, so today, in the mainstream, there are really considered to be three opinions, that of the Rav Mibis, the Chazon Ish, and Rav Tukachinsky at the 180-degree line. As far as Psak Halacha, you have to ask your local Rav. There are tshuvot starting from the late 19th century, where there are already tshuvot or questions being asked by people in Australia and in Japan. It really comes to the forefront during World War II when the Mir Yeshiva ends up being in Japan and then in China and dealing with Yom HaKippurim and traveling during that period of time, where they're sending letters back to Eretz Yisrael trying to determine exactly where the international dateline is. There are some that want to say that if you have two of the opinions that agree, out of those three opinions, that should be the determining factor for the international dateline. But it is something that needs more hachra, because as travel becomes easier to those parts of the world, it becomes an issue more and more about crossing over the international dateline. I'll send out more makorot so people can see more on this issue. Now we'll continue in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Zeira, Amar Rav Nachman, Kol Sveika de Kamei Shadinan. Whenever you have a suffix, we push it forward. Lememra. From this year we conclude, the Chamesha v'Shitzar Avdinan. When we have a suffix about which day is Yom Tov, we make it on the 15th of the month and the 16th of the month. Our Beisar lo Avdinan. We don't make it on the 14th. We only have a suffix as to whether it's the 15th and 16th of the month, for instance, Sukkot or Pesach. We don't have a suffix that it's the 14th, 15th, or maybe all 3 days. It should be the 14th, 15th, and 16th. So Mar says, V'la'avid nami our Beisar. Why don't we keep 3 days of Yom Tov? Because we aren't sure. There are numerous possibilities here of what could have happened. If you had two chaserim months beforehand, then the real day of Pesach is Arbesar. If you had one malay and one chaser, it's the 15th. If you had them both malayim, then it would have been on the 16th. So how do I know which one it is? How come I'm saying never the 14th, and sometimes the 15th, sometimes the 16th? So the Gemara says, V'lav inami Arbesar, dilma chasru la'av, v'chasru le'elul. We have here Elul, the Gerson Rashi seems to be, that should be v'chasrua l'shvat. They made a chaser in Av, as well as in Elul, or they made a chaser in Shvat, as well as Adar. If you have 2 months that are chaserim, then it will turn out that it would be what we were counting as being the 14th of the month, meaning based on an alternating cycle of one malay, one chaser, which generally should get you to the lunar year, because the lunar month is about 29 and a half days, so on average, if you get 29 and 30 days, it would average out to get you around 29 and a half days. So based on that, we would have assumed that it should be the 15th, but now when you got two chaserim, it'll pull it back to the 14th. So Gemara says, Treyarchi chaseri kali itluhu. If you have 2 months that are chaserim in a row, that has a kol. That gets well publicized. That means, as Rashi says here, that based on the cycle of one malay and one chaser, if they actually were mechaser shvat, that means that Tevet was a chaser, Shvat was a chaser already. That means you have 2 months in a row that were chaserim, which is unusual. And therefore, everybody would know already that there were two chaserim, and they would know to adjust already by the time they got to Adar, and they have a safek about whether that's 29 or 30 days, and they would know already that we have to adjust for it. And the same would be true by Tishrei. If Tammuz, which is supposed to be a chaser, and then Av, which is supposed to be a melee, was also made a chaser, that would have a kol by the time Elul came in, and we'd know to adjust backwards. So when there are 2 months in a row that are chaserim, people already know to adjust for that, and they'll move their expectations forward, and therefore there won't be a mistake of the 14th. That information would spread fast enough that there's never a safek of 3 days, there's only a safek of 2 days. That's part of what we discussed in the previous Mishnah, why the Shluchim went out on Elul, and why they went out on Adar, because once they established when that was, they lowered the safek according to Tosfot down to 2 days rather than 3 days, because they already know that there were two chaserim beforehand, or chaser and a malay, or two malayim, and then they could adjust their expectations for where Yom Tov would be based on Rosh Chodesh Nisan and Rosh Chodesh Tisrei. Okay, we'll stop over here.